All right, the good morning again. The court calls United States v. Garner. Thank you.
Good morning, members of the court. Chief Judge, Senior Judge, pleasure to see all of you again. As the court knows, this is a somewhat narrow issue in this case, and I will jump right into it. The military judge erred as she failed to instruct the panel members to reconsider their illegal sentence, and her failure to do so led to a dramatic increase in the appellant's sentence from 35 years to life. As the court also knows, you have granted review on as to whether specification 1 of charge 2 fails to state an offense. I do not plan on arguing that issue, as the court did not order a brief, but certainly if the court has any questions, we would be happy to answer them. The court is certainly aware of the factual background of the granted issue. As you know, in AD 94, in the joint appendix, the panel comes back with a sentencing worksheet that states two things: 35 years confinement and confinement for life without the possibility of parole. It seems clear that what the panel intended to do was to sentence the appellant to 35 years without parole, and all parties to the trial apparently.
How does it seem clear, counsel?
Well,
I mean, this to me is the ultimate in an ambiguous response. You got two contradictory things on the sentence worksheet. How can anything be clear?
Well, I think it's clear that what the panel intended to do, albeit not clear from the sentencing worksheet, was to sentence the appellant to 35 years without the possibility of parole.
How is that clear?
Because of the way that the questions were asked by the panel, because of the instructions, the continued instructions that were given by the military judge, that is certainly how the parties at trial.
Because the sentence worksheet clearly says to be confined for 35 years, and then also says to be confined for life without eligibility for parole.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So those are two distinct sentences.
They absolutely are.
Okay. And just looking at that, it appears, as Judge Dookie indicated, to be an ambiguity.
Well, Your Honor, I would argue two things, and I'll certainly get more into depth in that in just a second. There are sort of three things on the scales that we can look at this case. On the one hand, you have the sentences that are purely ambiguous, and I'll talk about that. That's the Robinson case. On the other hand, you have the sentences that are purely illegal, and I'll show an analogy of that in just a minute.
Can I interrupt you for a second and just ask this? Does any of that matter?
I believe it does, Judge.
The parties are debating whether it was ambiguous or whether it was an illegal sentence, but the one thing we know is the members went back out and they came back in and came up with something new.
That is correct.
So whether it was ambiguous or illegal, when they came out, they had 35 years, life without eligibility of parole. They went out, they came back in, and they had life.
That's correct.
That's different than either 35 years or life without eligibility for parole. Why doesn't that alone indicate that they reconsidered their sentence?
Oh, we believe it does, Your Honor.
So why does it matter whether you call that ambiguous or illegal or anything else? The case should be over at that point. They reconsidered their sentence, and they did it without any instructions.
Your Honor, I agree with you completely.
So why are you up there arguing about whether it's dancing on the head of an illegal pin or the ambiguous pin?
Well, there's a couple of reasons, Judge. Respectfully,
that's what the other side is doing. I don't know, but
well,
I mean,
if I can explain it respectfully. Certainly, the appellant's position is exactly what you have just stated. This panel reconsidered its sentence without any instructions on how to reconsider their sentence. And you're right. From our perspective, the argument stops there. However, the government has raised certain issues, and respectfully, Judge, you have one of the five votes on the court. And so in case any of the other judges had questions.
Well, the government have a great answer to that question.
I'm sorry, Judge, say again.
I'm sure the government has some terrific answer to my question as to why that isn't dispositive in this case.
I'm sure they do, and I plan
okay,
on
so
explaining
don't,
why
don't,
it is.
Don't stop yet.
I plan on explaining why it is dispositive.
Okay.
And so as I was saying, Judge, you sort of have these three possibilities. One is purely ambiguous, one is purely illegal, and one is what we arguably have in this case, which is a sentence that is both ambiguous and illegal. Although we don't concede that it's ambiguous, we certainly understand that the court may look at it that way. And so what happened in this case, as the Chief Judge just said, is the military judge then announced that her intent was to have the panel re-deliberate to clear this matter up. And then the panel comes back with a completely different sentence. And what's important in this case, and one of the things that distinguishes this case from U.S. v. Butler, is the fact that the defense counsel immediately objected to
the reconsideration, for lack of a better term, of the sentence and said, Your Honor, using the voting procedures that we use in a court-martial, this court has breached a legal sentence. And therefore, his argument at the time was that the procedure should have stopped then. Now, of course, that is not what happened. The military judge disagreed, and she ordered the panel to re-deliberate without instructing them on reconsideration. And all she did, to follow up on the chief judge's question, all she did was to say, reread the instructions that she had previously provided them, and did not read them the instructions on reconsideration, either from RCM 1009 or from the military judge's bench board.
What was missing, therefore?
The proper instruction, the voting procedures on how to vote for on how to conduct reconsideration.
But what was the delta between doing a whole new sentencing procedure following the original instructions and following a reconsideration instruction?
Well, there is a...
You see what I'm asking?
I'm not sure I do.
Well, if you say they went back in and followed the instructions that they had already been given, what was inadequate about those instructions, other than they weren't called reconsider?
Well, on their face, there was nothing inadequate about the instructions. They are the same instructions we give to any panel. The question is whether or not they were complete, and I guess inadequate in the sense that they did not include the instructions for reconsideration. But I'm not sure I'm tracking your question, Judge.
Saying they needed to be instructed on reconsideration, but what were they reconsidering? It's one thing to say, you know, here's a sentence to a bad conduct discharge in 2 years, and say, okay, now we're going to reconsider that, and you're instructed that blah 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 blah. But that's not what we've got here. We've got a sentence which makes no sense, and the judge sends them back and says, read my instructions and come up with a proper sentence, and they do it. So where's the problem?
Well, the problem is twofold, Judge. One is the panel obviously reconsidered. Now, whether they reconsidered their 35-year sentence or whether they reconsidered life without parole is unclear from the record, obviously. But they obviously reconsidered because they didn't come back with either one of those punishments. And so it seems clear that the panel did what they would have done had they been properly instructed, but they all did it without...
Follows up on the chief judge. If they did what they should have done, then where's the problem?
Well, Judge, I think the best analogy that I can give you is if we had a panel that went back on a findings matter, and they, without any instructions from the military judge on the elements of an offense, again, and with overwhelming evidence, they convicted the appellant. We wouldn't say, well, they obviously listened to the evidence. They obviously did what they would have done had they been properly instructed, because the evidence was so
overwhelming. I don't think your hypothetical is analogous, but go on.
And so what we have in this case is the military judge does not do anything except for to say, go back and start your deliberations anew, for lack of a better term.
What information would the members have had available to them if they had been instructed on the procedures for reconsideration that they didn't have based on his instructions on, just general instructions on sentence?
Right, Judge, and there is a specific, I didn't bring the language up with me, but in the military judge's bench book, derived from the language of RCM 1009, I think it's ECHO, is the voting procedure which says, if X number of you vote to increase a sentence, you do this, if a member proposes reconsideration, and X number of you vote, you do this. If the vote for reconsideration is to lesser the sentence, then you do this. And there is an entire scripted out procedure, for lack of a better term, the military judge's bench book.
So I'm assuming that they need to have a majority in order to increase the sentence, which is what you're arguing that they did.
I believe it's 3/4 to increase. No, it's a majority to increase the sentence, right, Judge?
But 3/4, what percentage do they need in order to impose a sentence of life?
3/4.
And which is greater?
Well, obviously life is greater.
No, which is greater? The percentage needed to increase the sentence, or the percentage needed in order to impose life.
And
so why isn't that dispositive on the issue of prejudice, if any?
Well, it's not dispositive, Judge, because we simply don't know what happened in the panel room. And I think it would be improper for this court to assume, well, X number is required, so we have to assume that X number was achieved. This court has said many times, using different cases, that we are not to guess what happened in a panel room. And I can, the best example that I can give the court is we have seen many cases in which an appellant may be convicted of a rape and a forcible sodomy, and a panel comes back and finds him guilty of one and not guilty of another, and we can sit here and scratch our heads and say, we don't understand how the panel did that, but this court has said we're not going to pierce that veil, so to speak, and go into the deliberations room and try and guess what they did, and I don't believe that we should do so here.
Counsel, where did the military judge err here? Did the military judge err by initially not instructing them on reconsideration, or did the military judge err once they came back with a new sentence that wasn't included in the first two options? Say, wait a minute, this looks like a reconsideration. I need to give you these sentences, and you need to go back and reconsider.
That's a fair question, Judge. And I want to clarify just one term, which is the term initially. I think initially might have been during the initial instructions, and obviously she would not give the instruction for reconsideration there.
Right.
So initially, after the panel members came back with two sentences, the appellant's position is the military judge then had a sua sponte obligation, especially when the defense counsel put them on notice that they objected to the letting the panel members go back and re-vote, so to speak. And that is the point that we believe the military judge had an obligation to send them back and say, you have reached two different sentences. You have to reconsider. Here are the instructions for reconsideration.
Counsel, go ahead. Excuse me.
To get there, you have to convince us that that was an illegal sentence. Isn't that correct? Under 1009?
I think any time that you have two sentences in one, it's per se illegal. You can't effectuate both of them.
Well, I mean, what it is.
You want to say it's illegal, right? And presumably the government wants to say it's ambiguous. And
well, they conceded it's illegal in their brief.
And you'd agree that those are two different things.
Absolutely.
So if we think that it's ambiguous as opposed to illegal, how did he err at point in time A? If we think that at the time that they came out with the sentence worksheet, that he looked at that sentence worksheet and said, I don't know what they're talking about. This is ambiguous. So if that's what he believed at the time, and if we agreed that it could be read as ambiguous as easily as it could be read to be illegal, how was it fair for him to send them back in without instructing them?
Honestly, Judge, as rare as it is for me to concede, I would concede that if this court were to believe that it's ambiguous, then the judge probably did not err at that point. And I think that would get back to your question, Judge, where then the error becomes when they've come back and obviously reconsidered his sentence and did so without the proper instructions for reconsideration. But the government concedes in their brief that the sentence in this case was illegal. So you sort of get, again...
What is the instruction you feel they should have had on reconsideration that they didn't get that makes the outcome prejudicial?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first part of your question.
What is the instruction they failed to get regarding reconsideration that makes this case prejudicial?
The instruction that they should have gotten is, you have rendered two separate sentences. Those sentences cannot mutually coexist. Therefore, I am giving you the instructions on reconsideration. Those instructions, and again, I didn't bring them up with me, but they're in the military judge's bench book, NRCM 1009 ECHO, are that if somebody proposes reconsideration and more than a majority of you vote to reconsider a higher sentence, then these are the procedures that you undertake. And if I think it's one-third, maybe one-fourth, proposes a lower sentence, these are the procedures you want to take.
But higher or lower than what, since you had two different sentences?
Well, that's a valid question, Judge. And that's why, and that shows, I think, more than anything, the problem that occurred in this case.
Well, or which way does that cut? You're saying we should reconsider. You're saying you should give the reconsideration instruction, and if it's higher, it's this, and if it's lower than that, but you have no basis to go for them.
Well,
so the instruction makes no sense.
Which certainly should not inure to the detriment of the appellant, I would argue, Your Honor. But certainly at that point, it shows the military judge's error in the fact that the defense counsel proposed the proper solution in this case at the time, which was they've reached a sentence. So in our opinion, what the military judge should have done is said, you have reached a sentence of 35 years. If one of you wants to reconsider, these are the processes for doing so.
Counsel, would it have been appropriate? What would have been wrong with the judge saying the following? Your sentence is ambiguous. It has at least four possible meanings. confinement for 35 years, 35 years to life, life, or life without parole. Two of those sentences are impermissible, 35 years to life and life without parole in this case, so you can't consider those. Excuse me, 35 years without parole and you can't consider those. So what I want you to do is to go back and tell me in this case which of the sentences that you are permitted to give, and then the judge would say, between among those ambiguous, here's what you're permitted to give. Clarify that. If you're not able to clarify, or if you want to reconsider, come back and tell me and I'll give you reconsideration instructions then. That is, why couldn't the judge identify among the ambiguous alternatives the lawful and the unlawful sentences, tell the members which one were unlawful and off the table, and say, now you choose between the two to, for purposes of clarification. But if you're unable to clarify, or if you wish to reconsider, come back and tell me, I'll give you reconsideration instructions.
Thinking off the top of my head, Judge, which is pretty much what I do up here, I have two concerns with that proposal. One of which is, the panel members had voted on a legal sentence, as pointed out by defense counsel at trial. And the subsequent vote,
no, I'm taking a different position here, and that is assuming that it's ambiguous. That is, there's not a legal sentence. That the judge comes to that conclusion. I'm not asking you to concede that, but assuming that that's the case, that we have an ambiguity and potential legal sentences within it, then why couldn't the judge give that instruction? Identify the unlawful and the lawful sentences and ask them to clarify. What's wrong with a request an instruction to clarify without reconsideration?
Because I think RCM 1009 Delta envisions that when the sentence is illegal, that it may be ambiguous and illegal, it may be solely illegal. But when the sentence is illegal, I believe that the manual envisions the requirement to then instruct on reconsideration.
And which words in there say that you can't clarify as opposed to reconsider?
And the best I can do, Judge, is by analogy, because 1009 Delta talks about post authentication,
right.
And 1009 Charlie does not. But I think by analogy that the appropriate mechanism at that point is to say these two sentences can exist, coexist, therefore you must reconsider. Subject, any further questions?
I have a further question. If you could turn you to page 1453 in the record, JA-26, do you happen to have it there?
JA-26, yes, Your Honor.
Lines 4 through 11. There's the instruction on considering a sentence that the judge gave. Let's say we'll stipulate that they went back and they reconsidered their sentence. You prevail on that point. Why isn't following that instruction not curative to any error?
Because it presumes that we know what the panel members did and we don't.
Well, let's assume they sentenced him 35 years. The first go around. You prevail on that point. Were they not allowed to go back and, following these instructions, change their sentence, provided they followed those instructions?
Well, no, Your Honor, because they apparently did. They obviously did reach the required concurrence when they came out and announced a sentence of, or had done a sentence of 35 years. And once they reach that requirement.
But they didn't announce it, it was not possible. You're making a different argument then, which is that it was not possible at that point for them to reconsider it.
Period. No, I'm trying to answer the direct question you had, Judge.
Yeah.
And your question was, how do we know that they did not follow those instructions? Well, I think we know that because they reached two different sentences. They reached the 35-year sentence, and then they kept going.
So your argument is, my question was, would those instructions be adequate? And your response is, we can't presume they followed those instructions because they didn't the first time.
And they wouldn't be adequate without instructions on reconsideration.
But I'm still trying to ask, what is the instruction that's missing on reconsideration?
The proper voting procedures.
And what's wrong with this voting procedure?
Because it is not the reconsideration voting procedure, it is the regular voting procedure.
What's the difference? What's the difference?
Well,
that's all I'm asking.
Okay.
What's the delta?
The delta is, as stated in RCM 10009E, the voting procedures that are clearly laid out, which require, instead of two-thirds, they require, I think, three-fourths, or no, a majority, rather, to vote to increase a sentence and one-fourth to decrease a sentence. This panel was sent back to reconsider with no instructions on reconsideration.
But presumably they had to have voted three-fourths to give a life sentence at that point.
I'm unwilling to make that concession.
But that's not based on a delta between the instructions. That's based on a view that you should not presume they followed the instructions.
That is correct.
I just want to make that clear, because I otherwise can't tell the difference.
No, I understand what you're asking. I understand.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Judge.
Appreciate your spending extra time with me on that. Counsel for the government.
May it please the court, Chief Judge Baker, members of the court, I'm Captain Ken Bordino, along with my co-counsel, Mr. Captain Dowell, represent the government. The central issue in this case comes down to when a military judge is presented with an ambiguous sentence by the panel before announcement, what must the military judge do to fix that situation, and what procedures must be followed? And the issue here comes down to appellant's position is that you must follow the reconsideration procedures under 1009E. And the issue, Judge Baker, is to the delta. What appellant's argument is that the procedures that must be followed is before the panel may re-deliberate on this and correct this otherwise ambiguous sentence, they must first vote whether to choose to do so. Because that's the entirety of the procedures under 1009E. The panel first votes whether to reopen deliberations. The procedures for the actual conduct of those re-deliberations is identical to the procedures in the first instance. When you read the military judge's bench book, the instructions that would have been given, all the new instructions on reconsideration focus on the fact of how you conduct that initial preliminary yes or no vote, do we want to reconsider? After that, the military judge's bench book essentially just refers the panel back to the original instructions as to the procedures that you
need. And what's your response to the appellant's argument that that's all fine, but why should we presume that this particular panel followed the instructions when they didn't do so the first time around?
Well, and I'm not sure that they didn't follow the procedures properly, Your Honor, because when you read the instructions as to how to arrive at a sentence, the way it comes forward is that each panel member writes down on whatever slip of paper, whatever sheet that they have, the entirety of the sentence that they believe is appropriate. So you write down whatever reduction, monetary, restraint, and punitive discharge. Each person writes down a full sentence. They then submit that up, and then the president puts those in order from least to greatest.
I don't mean to be a smart aleck, but if proper following of instructions leads to this result, is that what you're saying? This is what you should end up with?
Well, no, Your Honor. I think obviously they made a mistake, and that's clearly the issue that needs to be corrected here, is that they made a mistake in coming to the sentence. I believe Appellant's argument is the way he's saying that they didn't follow procedures is that they first must have come to 35, and that should have stopped the voting, but that they must have continued voting and voted on the life without parole. But I think the reading, if you take the idea that if they follow the instructions that you do a whole sentence, the idea is that some panel member must have proposed this exact sentence where they wrote down 35 years in life without possibility of parole. The panel then voted on it, and that's what they filled out the sentence.
Counsel, let's move away for a moment from the speculation as to what might have gone on in that room and deal with the piece of paper that we have.
Right, Your Honor.
And it's the government's position, it's ambiguous. That is, we don't know from that whether they had a sentence of 35 years, whether they had 35 years without parole, whether they had life, whether they had life without parole, whether they had 35 years to life. We don't know what was in their mind. And in that situation, my understanding is the government's position is that the members can clarify without going through the formal reconsideration procedures. Is that your position, or is your position that they went through a formal reconsideration here? And if so, what's the basis for that?
The government's position, Your Honor, is that the procedures of 1009E, where there is that predicate vote as to whether or not to go back to clarify or fix or correct the sentence, are not appropriate in this circumstance. What should be done is what the military judge did, is when you receive an ambiguous sentence such as this, the answer is to return it to the panel and send the panel back to the deliberation room with whatever other instructions that may be necessary to make sure they understand how they're supposed to vote or their limitations on sentence, and then have them reconsider the sentence. And then And the problem is we use the term reconsideration, and there's the generic use of the term reconsider. And then there's the specific term that we use under 1009E.
So it's the government's view that when there's an ambiguous sentence, the members can go back and start from ground zero and impose any sentence that occurs to them that's a lawful sentence. For example, in this case, the judge instructed them specifically on a sentence of 45 days. So is it the government's view that in this case they could reconsider and come back with a sentence of 45 days? And I'm not talking about the likelihood in terms of the underlying offense, but in terms of the range of their authority.
I believe so, Your Honor. And because the issue comes down to the fact that we have an ambiguous sentence, we have no idea what the intent was, and we're not going to try to presume what the intent is in that circumstance. And so the answer is to go back and to try to fix the sentence. And I think...
So that if there's a sentence, for example, in a case in which the maximum could be anywhere from 0 to 30 years, and they have 5 years without parole, and the judge would re-instruct them, go back and do it again, and they could come back with a sentence of 30 years.
Yes, sir, I believe that would be appropriate. And I believe the issue comes down
without
to...
Without any instructions on reconsideration.
Not the instructions under 1009E, no doubt. Because of the fact that 1009E, the instructions there would not be applicable, and there's three primary reasons why those instructions are not pertinent in this type of circumstance.
I understand that, but my question is, why shouldn't there be instructions on clarification? That is, if there's an ambiguity, Why isn't the responsibility of the panel at that point to clarify the ambiguity as opposed to starting from ground zero? That is, you've had the vote, you've had the deliberation, they come back in the hypothetical I gave with 5 years and no parole, and now as a result of that ambiguity or illegality, they can go back without any instructions on reconsideration and come back with 30 years? That's permissible?
Yes, Your Honor, because I think the issue comes down to the fact that when you have an ambiguous sentence, especially such as one as in this case, you have no idea what their intent was. And to have them clarify something, the military judge would have to first attempt to presume what part of their intent was and then instruct them to pick one of those two partial intents. And I think that that's what's inappropriate. And I think the better course of action is to go back and let the panel choose a proper sentence based on the proper instructions of voting procedure.
Counsel, is it your position that when the members came back, they clarified the sentence?
Clarified or corrected?
Corrected is not a term that we're dealing with here. To keep it simple, they had two options, just looking at the terminology as it appears on the worksheet. And the military judge, in her comments in 39A, said, this needs to be clarified. She gave them the instructions again, which if they would have listened to, we wouldn't be here. And they came back yet with a new sentence. That doesn't appear to be a clarification, because that didn't appear in the original ambiguity, and you're arguing ambiguity. So it appears that it is. What they did at that point was that they reconsidered the sentence.
Well, yes, Your Honor, and I think they went through the procedures and they did the full voting and they chose a new sentence. And I think
how did they know if, in fact, in their original sentence it was for 35 years, how did they know that they needed a majority in order to impose the life sentence?
Well, they'd already been instructed that if they wished to choose a life sentence, that it was a three-quarters vote to do so. So they already had all the original instructions. As far as the procedures for how they physically conduct the vote to choose a sentence, they'd already been instructed on that. And that's not essentially what appellant is challenging in this case. They're challenging solely the whether or not that predicate 1009E vote should have been utilized. And that's their primary complaint, is that was not utilized, and that's what the panel should have done, was first go back and vote as to yes or no, do we want to try to fix this? And I don't think that's appropriate in this circumstance, and there's three reasons why it's not appropriate. The first, for practical purposes, in a situation exactly like this, where you have two sentences to define, both 35 years and life eligibility for parole, the procedures under 1009E are a vote to determine whether or not to reopen deliberations, and the predicate for that vote is based on the amount of people that vote for it, whether or not you can increase or decrease the sentence. And here, practically, are you increasing the 35 years or are you decreasing the life without the possibility of parole? And that's one reason why, practically, this type of procedure shouldn't apply to this circumstance and this type of ambiguity. The second is more of a policy reason. And it comes down to the fact that the panel is discharged to impose a sentence on an accused, or to attempt to impose a sentence and to take all reasonable measures to find a sentence. And in 1006D1, RCM 1006D1, makes clear that members have a duty to vote for a proper sentence. And under this circumstance, if we follow Appellant's argument and follow the 1009D principle here, where you have an ambiguous sentence that cannot stand on its own, we are giving the panel members a choice whether to fix it or not. And that's not appropriate, because the panel should be required to fix it.
This is a military panel that meets all the qualifications of Article 25. I'm not sure I understand where you're going with that argument. If the judge instructs them which sentences are illegal, why is the government arguing here that the panel's going to go off on their own and do their own thing and not follow their oath of office and do the responsibilities we expect of officers under Article 25?
Well, the question, Your Honor, is first that if the military judge finds your sentence is illegal or ambiguous, and we cannot allow the sentence to be final to stand or whatnot, first you have to vote whether or not you wish to reconsider and whether or not you wish to reopen deliberations. And there's, of course, if we follow that procedure, there has to be the possibility that they will vote no, and that may come up in a certain circumstance, and that cannot be the answer that we can allow, that a panel is not required to go back and fix this.
Is it your position that a military judge cannot direct reconsideration under 1006? That he has to give the panel the option to vote to reopen deliberations, which appears to be the language.
Under 1009E?
1009E.
Well, I think in that circumstance where you have a panel member who wishes to reopen, then yes, you do follow the procedures for reconsideration.
And where in the regulation does it say that the military judge can direct reconsideration? It says that they can direct clarification.
Correct, Your Honor, and I think it comes down to clarification and reconsideration. And we're using reconsideration, that term generically, as, you know, you're reconsidering an otherwise illegal sentence. And essentially, the concept is correct in a sense. Reconsideration under 1009E is a very specific term of art at that point, where it's reconsideration of an otherwise lawfully imposed sentence.
And who generates that? Can the military judge initiate that?
Under 1009E?
Yes.
No, Your Honor. Only panel member may choose reconsideration under 1009E. And essentially, the policy behind it is it makes sense in the context that as when you follow the voting procedures, once you get the requisite number of votes for a certain sentence, all discussion stops. That is the sentence. It may come down to the fact that since we obviously don't require unanimous votes, a dissenter may wish to reopen discussions. And so the procedure is set up so that dissenter has a voice and an ability to request that they reopen deliberations.
Why wouldn't the instruction that I raised before address the problems you've discussed here? And that is, if it's clarification, have the judge identify the ambiguity and the illegality of the sentence. In this case, it would be you can't have a sentence of 35 years without parole, for example. But you can have, in the sentence that you've announced, you could have 35 years, you could have life, you could have life without parole, etc. If you are able to clarify what you did, go back and do it. If you're not able to clarify and you wish to reconsider, come back and tell me, and I'll tell you what the procedure is. Why couldn't the judge give an instruction like that so we would understand what's going on here, whether they are in fact clarifying or whether they are in fact reconsidering? Why shouldn't the judge be, at that point, responsible for identifying what's going on in the courtroom and in the deliberation room?
Well, I guess 2 points to that, Your Honor. And the two issues would be that, in the first instance, when the military judge first gives that instruction, the first question is going to be, or the first point that she would have to be following is that she would have to be assuming in part what the panel meant to find those two potentially permissible.
No, she's not assuming that, because she's saying here, if your sentence, there's an ambiguity, and if this is what you intended, come back and tell me. If this is not what you intended, come back and tell me, and I'll give you instructions on reconsideration. So she's not assuming that they did X, Y, or Z as a definitive matter. Rather, she's saying, I read the ambiguity here, and I want to know, did you do X, Y, or Z as your sentence? If you did, come back and tell me. We've got a clarification, and the sentence is over. If you didn't do that, I'll have to give you instructions on reconsideration.
Well, and I guess the question there, Your Honor, would be what would the instructions on reconsideration be? And what would the predicate instructions be? Because on 1009E, the instructions would be that you have to vote whether to reconsider. And if a majority of people vote to increase the sentence, then you may increase the sentence. If I can't blank on the number, but whatever it is, if to decrease the sentence, then you may decrease the sentence. But here, are we increasing or decreasing the sentence? Because we don't have a sentence to increase or decrease. And I think that that shows the flaw with the concept of 1009E's reconsideration procedures. And that's why they're not asking here. Because what we have is a circumstance where you come back with an ambiguous sentence that cannot stand on its face. So the issue, this has to be corrected. So the panel has to go back and fix this issue.
In this case, then, on the record we have, based on the instructions that the judge gave, which, as you've acknowledged, they could come back with a sentence as low as 45 days or as high or even lower or as high as life without parole, we don't know whether they clarified, that is, whether they simply said, yes, this is what we decided before and now we're telling you this, or they came up with something new. And it's the government's position that that doesn't matter. We don't need to know. They can go back and they can either clarify or they can do it again. And as long as they're instructed that they can do whatever they want within legal maximums and minimums, that's fine. Is that the government's view?
That is, Your Honor, because of the fact that we don't, and we come to this issue that we don't know why they came up with this original sentence. Because we're not going to, one, question why the panel's going to come up with a sentence in the first place.
And we don't know why they came up with the second sentence either. We don't know whether they were clarifying or reconsidering.
Right, and that's the type of impermissible, I think, questioning of what's going on in the panel's deliberation room and through the thought process of the members as to why they came up with a particular sentence. And I think the circumstance here is, there are obviously rational explanations we can all try to hypothesize about as to why they came up with the original sentence and why that somehow transformed into the life sentence on its own. But I think that's the type of impermissible discussion we're not supposed to get into under RC-1007C and MRS-606. And I think that those types of mental thought processes should not be inquired into. And the issue is merely that when a military judge is faced with this type of ambiguous sentence, the answer is simply that it has to go back to the panel, and the panel has to fix or correct the sentence.
Do you have any information from those few states that have jury sentencing? You have capital cases, but let's put those aside for the moment. Those states that have jury sentencing, whether there's any practice or procedure in this regard that we could draw upon.
At my disposal at this moment, Your Honor, I do not, for how states would handle that issue.
All sentences involve at least a majority vote, don't they?
Correct, Your Honor.
So is it the government's view that any erroneous reconsideration is self-correcting, provided they voted on a sentence?
How so, Your Honor?
Well, if it takes a majority to increase a sentence,
right.
Any increase in the sentence necessarily took a majority vote.
Right, Your Honor.
So QED, you voted to reconsider at the same time you increased the sentence.
I think that was...
So then the next question is, if that's the case, can you ever have a harmful error in the government's view? It doesn't seem to me that the reconsideration gets you anything other than an additional step.
Right, Your Honor, and that's and specifically with this case.
So what's the purpose of the reconsideration rule, then, if it's a nullity?
Because reconsideration, 1009E is not a nullity when the panel member proposes reconsideration. And then they have the predicate vote as to whether or not they wish to reconsider.
Before they've come back out.
Before they come back out. I think that there are procedures if it's after they come back out. But the general concept is that, and the way you envision that this practically happens most often, more than likely, is, you vote on the sentence, you pick one, and whoever, one of the people that didn't vote for that sentence, or may have wanted a higher or lower sentence or whatnot, may disagree with that and may think that further discussion is warranted by the rules they're not allowed to have further discussion. So they may request reconsideration, and if then a majority, for whatever reason in that time frame decides...
All happening inside the jury room.
Potentially, Your Honor, or as you're coming out.
But my understanding is that the government's argument is that in any case it would be harmless error if you have a sentence vote that's three quarters or more.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think particularly under this type of circumstance, there is no error, or it would be
harmless. Presumably harmless if it's a majority or more.
Well, yes, Your Honor, and that's why, but we're dealing with circumstances where the military judge has sent it back for either clarification or correction. We're not dealing with circumstances of 1009E, and that's the government's point, is 1009E is a specific circumstance that is dealt with on its own. It should not be applied to these other circumstances where we have an ambiguous or otherwise illegal sentence noticed by the military judge before announcement of the sentence. Pending any further questions, I may briefly conclude. The government's position here is that when a military judge is faced with an ambiguous or otherwise illegal sentence, the proper procedure is for it to go back to the panel to correct or clarify that sentence. And the voting procedures of RCM 1009E are not required. RCM 1009E only applies when there is first an otherwise lawfully valid sentence, and second, a panel member requests that they reopen deliberations, and then those instructions are given to determine whether or not the panel should reconsider their first otherwise lawfully imposed sentence. An unlawfully imposed sentence or an ambiguous sentence must be corrected, and it should not be the option of the panel whether to do so or not. Thank you very much.
Thank you, members of the court. Members of the court, what I would like to do is address some of the questions that were raised both in my original argument and in my opposing counsel's argument to hopefully help focus the court a little bit, because I'm concerned that I personally am sort of losing the forest for the trees. And Judge Irvin, your question sort of reminded me of that, which is we know that they reconsidered their sentence because they did not clarify anything. Assuming that my immediate presumption is incorrect, that their intent was 35 years without parole, but even assuming that whether it was or wasn't correct is irrelevant, it's clear that we have two separate sentences on the sentencing worksheet. The panel did not clarify anything. Clarification would have been to come back and say 35 years or life without parole. That is not what happened in the instant case. What happened in the instant case is that they clearly reconsidered their sentence, and they did so without the proper instructions to do so. And respectfully to my opposing counsel, if you follow his argument to its logical conclusion, RCM 1009E is simply irrelevant and would never be employed because we know that a majority votes to reach a sentence. It takes a majority to reconsider. So we would never have a problem and never have an issue with regards to reconsideration. Obviously, the manual president promulgated the procedures for reconsideration for a reason. So, Judge, to answer your – I'm sorry, did you have a question? So, Judge, to answer your question, did they clarify their sentence? No. They clearly reconsidered. I'd like to clarify, to use the term of the day, one more matter. The question was, can a military judge order reconsideration? Respectfully, I disagree with my opposing counsel. I believe that she could have in this case. Under the comments to 1009E of the manual that was in place at the time, if you look at footnote 6 of my brief, the comments clearly state that the rule says any member of the court-martial can request reconsideration, and the comments say that the military judge can request reconsideration. So, Senior Judge, this goes back to your statement of could the military judge simply have ordered them to reconsider? And while I disagree that might have been a proper way to do it, there's no question that she could and should have ordered them to reconsider. And, in fact, we know that they did reconsider.
Counsel, without your conceding your argument on the manual, I ask you to concede that. Is there anything in the UCMJ or in the Constitution or analogy from state law that would preclude the circumstance that happened in this case from happening? That is, if the manual rule didn't exist, would this be otherwise illegal or unconstitutional or by analogy from state law improper?
Well, I believe the Jones case from this court states that when you have a sentence that is both illegal and ambiguous, that the proper procedure was to reconsider. So I do believe that there is authority outside of the manual for that proposition. Subject to any further questions from the members of the court, that concludes the defense presentation. I will see you bright and early tomorrow.
Thank you very much. The court thanks both counsel. Case is now submitted and will stand in recess until tomorrow morning. Thank you very much.
Court stands in recess until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow.